This is Red Eyes Radio. This is Red Eyes Radio. Welcome, my friends. I'm your host, Henrik Palmgren. I am coming to you from the west coast of Sweden. This is our weekly show here on bbsradio.com, and you can hear us every Sunday at 2 p.m. Pacific time, that's 10 p.m. Greenwich time. And a big thanks to everyone out there sending me emails with your kind comments, encouragements about the this radio show and the site, and I very much appreciate hearing from all of you guys out there, so a big thank you for all your support. And if you're new to this program, you can find much more about what we're doing here on the web. So check out our news website, which is red-eyes.net. And it will help you keep an eye on things as it gets crazier and crazier down the road here. And I mean, the war in the Middle East continues. And now this latest terror plot thing over in England. And if you have been tuning in to the last few programs that we have been doing here and listening to the special focus series that we are making available through the website that you can download, you know that we have been spending some quite some time on the topics of the war in the Middle East and how it connects to the Bible and Zionism and the state of Israel. And we've been looking back into history and exploring different threads of information and trying to, you know, understand what is happening here and why. And today I have invited author and researcher Judy Andreas to join me on the program to share her interesting perspective on all these things and much, much more. And she writes excellent essays, many that appear on Rens.com and also, of course, on her own site, which you can find at judyandreas.com. So it's going to be very interesting hearing more about Judy, her articles, about her book, Judaism, and how she got involved on this. So welcome to the program, Judy, and thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Well, it's my pleasure. I just want to tell people that my book, Judaisms, is spelled J-U-D-Y.
Yeah.
I-S-M-S, because some people think when they hear Judaism, they think I'm writing a book about the Jewish religion.
Yeah. That is correct. It's good to sort that out. And by the way, is your book available through your site, or how can people get
it? Yes, it is. People, as you gave my site, the 3 W's, judyandreas.com. They go on there. They can find out about it. It's a collection of my essays, and then a little more.
Excellent. So, I mean, why don't we, you know, begin at the beginning here, and maybe you can tell us who Judy Andreas is and how you got involved in this, you know, very unpopular task of trying to unravel and understand reality.
Well, you used the right word when you said unpopular. I just had a morning that really proves how unpopular I can be. Well, first I'll tell you, for the people who don't know, I was born of Jewish parents, and my mother was actually considered a Zionist, although I believe at that time Zionism wasn't as pernicious as it is now. I think it just meant people who wanted a homeland for the Jews.
Yeah.
My father would have been a rabbi, but he was Orthodox.
Mm-hmm.
But he decided to be a doctor because he had watched his own mother die when he was 16 of esophageal cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So he was kind of a poor doctor, you know, one of those guys that made the house calls in the middle of the night with a little black bag, and if people couldn't pay, they didn't pay, and just, I guess, what medicine should be. I mean, he was quite idealistic and humane.
Mm.
And but I didn't grow up, he didn't really, if he did go to synagogue, he went by himself because my sister and I were rebels from the get-go. We weren't interested in getting up for any Sunday school classes or whatever.
Yeah.
And as we got older, we began rebelling against a lot of things. So we just didn't really go along with the holidays very much. My mother tried, but I guess she gave up after a while. And so I was kind of apolitical back in those days. I just, I didn't really care. I was exploring all kinds of things. I was exploring the hippie culture, and and then I was going, dabbling in different religions, and got involved with raising a family. And it wasn't until I heard a program on actually a progressive radio station, where they were talking about Clinton and Bush being friends and being involved in the Mena, Arkansas drug drop.
Yeah.
And I was totally astounded. I was born into a typical liberal / Democrat family, and it was just such a disillusionment, and yet I believed it. And it started me that I started on a new path at that point, but I didn't get into Judaism / Zionism until I heard a program called Taking Aim, which featured Ralph Schoenman and his wife Maya Schoen. And all of a sudden, it started to dispel the myths I had heard in my household.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't grow up with any of this kind of racist stuff that I've read on the internet that, you know, that maybe more Orthodox families grow up with.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, my mother had bad experiences as a child. She had been, she was in a neighborhood that on Easter Sunday they would throw stones at her family and call them Christ killers. And my father's family was from Russia, and they had been in the pogroms. His father his brother had almost been shot at, an older brother. So they were wary of what this is a tired word now, but anti-Semitism.
Yeah, of course.
But when my sister and I both married out of the religion, we did not get any real flack over it. We didn't get any racist sayings or, horrible non-acceptance. In fact, the husbands were accepted very, very warmly. So that's kind of my background, and I don't know if that's, if you want more, kind of brings me up to where I am now.
Yeah, I mean, that's great, but, I mean, maybe this radio show that you heard, I mean, because I think that's a pretty interesting thing that people, you know, all of a sudden, even that they can't maybe prove it, they instantly resonates with what is being said, you know, maybe that you knew that it was the truth that you heard on that radio show, but you couldn't prove it. Is that correct? I mean,
yeah, and it's interesting because, as I said, I had some experience this morning. I seem to have a lot of my friendships have changed since I've been talking about the things I talk about.
Yeah.
And there's one female friend that I've still managed to salvage. It's a friendship with a Jewish woman who happens to be pro-Israel, and she started sending me all this information today, and I started sending her things back, and she just said, let's not even talk about this. And I said, you know, but you don't even read what I say. And she says, well, you know, you have your opinion, I have mine. And now, with somebody like this person, she would not resonate with anything I had heard. She would just kind of close her ears to it. So I don't know what the difference is. I don't know why. It's not that I'm gullible and believe everything I hear.
Of course.
Just that sometimes I feel that my intuition's pretty good.
Yeah.
And when I heard this, for some reason, and I had a certain amount of confidence in the host, and also I have this philosophy that you can't hang on to belief systems. You have to, otherwise you're uneducable.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to change totally, not to accept anything as truth.
You know,
because I think then we're doomed, and I wonder if we're doomed anyway. After this morning, I wonder if we're doomed. But I really believed it, and I mechanism. He shattered everything that I had heard.
Yeah.
And from there on in, I was on a train that I couldn't get off.
Hmm.
It wasn't always a pleasant, I mean, it's been a very bumpy ride, but,
yeah.
You know, I feel for some reason I've accepted this mission or role, and I have to continue doing it because we're in, to me, I just heard somebody say something about going from nervous to scared, you know?
Mm, yes.
And I think that we're in a very frightening position now.
It feels kind of like that. Yes, I agree.
And
I mean, is it anything that you can, you know, point at, put your finger on? I mean, what is it that makes this time different now than
well,
maybe?
Well, I think all the fact that as I've done my research and read all these articles, which are, I mean, my mailbox is a disaster. I couldn't possibly read everything that comes in without going blind. when I begin reading about how long these plans have really been in effect, I was reading things about the Illuminati and the third pope of the Illuminati, Albert Pike, who talked about the three world wars, and he talked about them in the 1800s.
Yes.
And he wasn't a prophet. I mean, he was just, it was just like almost telling what was going to happen.
Yeah.
He said the first two would be with Germany, and the third would be between the Zionists and Islam.
Yeah.
Now, here we are.
Yes.
And it feels like we've been set up that we're just kind of, I love the expression sheeple. I mean, I don't love being one, but I think it's very descriptive.
Yeah, it is.
And we're lambs to the slaughter.
Yeah.
And we've been set up, and I think both sides have. I've written also about how the Jews have been duped, and then I took it upon myself, well, I figured, well, maybe because of my background, even though I'm not a practicing Jew at this point,
yeah,
I would have more of an ability to help to open Jewish eyes.
Yeah.
But it's almost, it's like banging my head against the wall.
Mm.
And so you have people who are, you know, who are warring, and the United States supplying all this ammunition, and a lot of people in the United States falling for every false flag, every faux terror attack, and just not even questioning the some of it is so ludicrous that I don't see how anybody can believe it.
Yeah.
And then we have things just kind of getting worse and worse in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And we have this thing that happened in Great Britain, and too many people are predicting that there's going to be these attacks in the United States.
Yeah.
And that people are going to believe them, and it's going to be a very easy jump from here to martial law.
Yeah.
Or the bird flu is another, you know, thing that people are afraid of.
Yeah.
Kind of.
I mean, are they still, you know, ramping that over there? I mean, is it?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was listening to something where they were talking about. It was a Dr. Carly actually, and she was talking about how to combat the vaccine, since there are so many people that don't even know how destructive vaccines are.
Yeah, exactly.
That the vaccine is probably worse than the disease, if there is a disease.
Yeah.
And what to do, you know, and then people start making money selling preparedness kits, and you wonder, do I want to survive? I mean, what is this going to be like in the final analysis? So it just feels like we've really have at least one foot in World War III, maybe more than one foot.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, it's scary, actually. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, how? What is the? This is an impossible question, of course, but I'm going to say it anyway. I mean, how can we prevent this then from you know taking place and playing out as Pike suggested?
Yeah. I almost wonder if we can. After speaking to certain people, and even when you come out with just facts and figures and they don't want to hear it,
yeah,
it's like I know that you've had Michael Pazarian on, and I happen to be a great fan of his.
Yeah, great.
And it's just, people have this, what Jung would call the archetype of the Big Daddy, or the Animus.
Yes.
And the president becomes this archetype, and people want to believe so strongly. It's like if somebody upsets your belief system in what God is, or, you know, is there a God, and people don't want to hear about it, and they get very, very offended.
Yeah.
And they need to have this kind of a comfort zone that God is in his heaven and all's right with the world.
Yeah.
And the president's in the White House, and he has things under control. And look at that.
Hmm.
There was another terrorist attack thwarted.
Yeah.
So, you know, so they must be doing their job.
Perfect timing, too.
Yes. Isn't it always when the ratings are going into the tanker?
Yeah, exactly.
And my sister, who's a very bright woman, and she lives in England, she's very anti-Israel. She was talking about the huge demonstrations. She says, I think Blair is the only one that's pro-Israel in this country.
Mm.
And yet, if I talk to her about 9/11, she says, oh, I don't want to go there. And I remember the last time they had that supposed terrorist attack in Great Britain, and I said something to her, and she said, Judy, can't you believe that anything is just the terrorists? So I said, okay, well, I was visiting her, and I'm going to walk home. So so I just allow it to be, because I don't want a war. I don't want a war on a personal level. I don't want a war on a global level.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I guess too many people identify themselves with their, you know, opinion or even, as you say, their own comfort zone. And as soon as you begin to question that, it is like, I guess people might take it on as a personal, you know, assault or attack on them, on who they are. And yeah, and as you said, as long as people identify themselves with their faith or with their, country or whatever, I mean, they will be personally attacked as soon as you begin to question these things. So how do we, can we ever break free from that? I mean,
that's a question I can't answer.
Me neither.
I know that Michael Tazarian talks about coming, the galaxies coming into different energies, and
I remember
a lot of people that want Jesus to come back, or they feel extraterrestrials are going to intervene, or they're looking outside themselves.
Outside, yeah.
For somebody to come and solve the problem. I'm a spiritual person, and I'm a believer in God, but I'm also a believer in that God will work with you, but not for you.
Yeah.
And that it really behooves us to start doing something and to figure out ways to escape this net that we're trapped in. And I'm not really sure we can. I'm not really sure that this isn't going to be a horrendous lesson that we're going to all get. And maybe some of us won't even learn it after we get the lesson.
Yeah.
Because people will have their own interpretations of what happened and why.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's the thing here, because if this is a lesson that we must learn, you know, that we can't put our trust in external things all the time, that we have to, you know, take responsibility of who we are and what we're doing here, then I guess a situation like this is ultimately inevitable, because we have to wake up from the slumber. And I mean, I don't know what are we going to do here. I mean,
well, you said something really really important about taking responsibility, because I've read so much on the internet and I've listened to so many conversations, and I think people on both sides do not take responsibility. People like to play the blame game all the time. There are certain essayists who will focus on a group ad nauseum. If it rains, it's the fault of the group, you know. And they never take responsibility for what they're doing or not doing, because sitting behind a computer ranting is not necessarily going to be the answer either.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're in a divide and conquer mode right now.
Yeah.
We're being set up by a group that, if you want to call them Illuminati, or lately they've changed their name to Zionists or whatever.
Yeah.
But whoever this group is, they have covered all their bases, and they know exactly how to manipulate us.
Yeah.
And if we're going to fall for fighting amongst ourselves, then it's all over.
Yeah.
And I think it might have been Tsarian also, might have been an interview on your show, where he talked about looking at who's doing the firing. Look at, get out of your encampments. We should, and I hate to use the word should, but we all should be pointed in the same direction.
Yeah.
Because there's something that is bigger than Jews or Jesuits or, whoever people are blaming these days. And they'll play any role. They'll adopt any religion, any philosophy, any belief system, because their love is darkness. Their love is greed and power and lust and control.
Yeah.
And they'll do anything that they can to keep it. And apparently they never have enough. So and there are so many of us, and we're a threat. Our sheer numbers are a threat.
Yeah.
But we've been so dumbed down. We're so busy watching the television. Somebody calls it the saucer in the corner of the room. But it is. People care. I've never even seen Paris Hilton. People care about her. People care about these reality shows, and they're not even involved in reality.
Exactly. We don't like, smart ass who knows what's going on. We like stars, and we like it that way, and that's how it should be, and that's the comfort zone right now, I think. And maybe people are panicked too, because in some sense they can maybe feel what's going on, although they don't know it. But the threat of that feeling is so huge right now, so people might do, anything to avoid going there. I don't know. I mean,
that's really perfectly put. I remember shortly after 9/11, I was at a dinner party, and there was a woman there, kind of a left-leaning type, and she said, if I thought the government had anything to do with 9/11, I couldn't get up in the morning.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she would be the old ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
She's much happier being that way, and a lot of people are.
Yeah.
I've had my own daughter-in-law say to me, don't go there. I've lost people in the World Trade Center, don't go there.
Yeah.
I said, well, if you lost people, wouldn't you want to know the truth about it? But it doesn't compute, because it's just easier. I mean, if you think that your own government would kill its own citizens, that's a very sobering thought.
Indeed. I mean, what more can they, possibly be conspiring about then? I mean, if you allow yourself to maybe not believe it at first hand, but allow yourself to elaborate at least on the thought and the possibility that it might be true.
And if you elaborate too long, you may come to the conclusion that it is true, and then this illusion of security completely melts away, because there is no security.
Yeah.
There's no one to protect us.
Precisely.
And we have to find our own meaning and our own solution.
Yeah.
And our own, I said to something earlier about hearing this person say something about going from nervousness to being absolutely scared. But I know that fear is not the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because fear is what they're spreading all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The terrorists are coming, the diseases are coming, the cancer is coming, the storms, everything is always, it's always coming, the alerts are always around, the war on everything is an abysmal failure.
Yeah.
And so they keep us in this state of fear, and we're easily manipulated.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, are you guys on any, you know, heightened alert over there because of the things going on in England now?
Well, the last I heard, we were.
Okay.
Yesterday, I got a ticket to go to Dallas for the opening of a Terror Storm at the end of this month, and my travel agent said to me, "You better get to the airport 3 hours early because somebody told me that there was a 2.5 hour wait at the security."
Okay.
And I'm just hoping that dies down a little bit in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I cannot see standing on a line for 2.5 hours.
No, of course. I mean, and it's
many reasons.
And it's a bit humorous, actually, almost, to see, because I was looking at, I think, yesterday at the BBC live feed through their site, and I know everywhere over in England there, I saw people, you know, standing around, and they, and all the things that were happening are just, you know, ordinary people who are, you know, suffering because of this, and they can't bring along any hand baggage or anything. They can't, you know, have a milk carton on board the plane. And I mean, it is almost ridiculous looking at this because the perspective isn't there, because there is no proof, yet at least, no proof that even this plot was happening. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, you can't bring, she said you can't bring toothpaste. I hope they sell it at the hotel. I mean, everything becomes a weapon after a while.
Yeah.
I mean, box cutters were kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
Wouldn't people take their luggage from the overhead racks and just bop the guys on the head?
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, it's like hijacking a plane with a toothpick.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
Oh my God, he's got a weapon. It's a toothpick.
Oh yeah, he's got a weapon. He's got an appointment book. He might smack the pilot over the head.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think a woman was being interviewed on the news, and she said, "Oh, it's worth it to me. I feel so much safer."
Mm.
You know, that's the thing. And I've heard, this is not mine, you know, I think it's probably been said to death, but Bush starts off, you know, they did it because they hate our freedoms.
Yeah.
And then all our freedoms are just being taken away from us.
Yeah.
Not by them, but by the them in the White House, by this administration or who's ever pulling their strings.
Yeah.
So and people are glad to give their rights away. Oh, just protect me. Please protect me.
Yeah. Do you think that, I mean, there could be something more behind it? I mean, we have, you know, the Madison Avenue and the Tavistock Institute, I know, working on, you know, social engineering, and the psychological aspects of all this seems to be, at least for me, a big factor. I mean, how they the words they use and the terms and when and how they use it. I mean, statements like this by Bush.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's huge. I think the Tavistock Institute is really huge. I think we're constantly being mind controlled.
Yeah.
And you sometimes wonder about a lot of the people that all of a sudden say strange things. I get a lot of literature. Sometimes I'm not really sure about it, but somebody, you know, saying about we have somebody who comes forth all of a sudden and makes a disruption or does something is totally mind controlled.
Yeah.
And I think that, I hate to say clever because it's like a diabolical cleverness.
Yeah.
That we, who are kind of ordinary in a way, you know, in terms of our ethics and principles, etc., cannot conceive of the ruthlessness and the technology that these people have at their disposal.
Mm, yeah.
And that's why it can be discouraging.
Yeah.
Because you say, what kind of a match am I? I mean, I had an experience when I wrote my essay, Zionism is Nobody's Friend.
Yeah.
I had an experience where I started getting phone calls. Well, first I started getting some of the hate mail from people calling me a traitor and a this and a that and all, and other four-letter words.
And by by the way, I can just mention that that article will be posted on my site when this interview airs, so people will be able to read it at red-ice.net.
Thank you.
So yeah, please continue.
Yeah, so I mean, I get, you know, all this just these four-letter words and other things.
Yeah.
But then I started getting phone calls in the middle of the night, waking me up, calling me names, calling me Holocaust denier. I don't remember ever saying a word about the Holocaust in that essay.
Yeah.
KKK member. I mean, where did that come from? Then this guy was yelling at me and saying, why are you talking about 9/11 being an inside job? And then he even went into, and you don't believe that Oswald killed Kennedy? I could not believe this man. He was covering every conspiracy in the world. And he was also threatening, because he was threatening, I'm going to tell your neighbors about you, I'm going to this, I'm going to... And almost like connecting himself to the Russian mafia. And I'm... And I'll tell you, I was nervous.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm 5'2", size 6". I'm not a match for some ruthless people. And I don't know if these are just cyber terrorists or... once you graduate to the phones, you're more than a cyber terrorist. I don't know if it stops at the phones.
No. Who knows?
So I spoke to a policeman friend of mine, and who was very much on my team, and he said he was almost like throwing up his arms in despair. It's like, lots of luck, lady, you know, that you're fighting a power that's, you're not going to win.
Mm.
So how much do I really want to fight this power?
Yeah.
It's a tough call because I want to maintain my integrity.
Yeah.
I want to speak my truth. I guess I'm going to die sooner or later. I really want to walk into the line of fire.
Yeah.
But so it's a balancing act like everything else.
Yeah, because I think, you know, sometimes you end up in a place where you, you know, might not want to be, but because of the nature of how reality plays out, you got to, you know, get involved in certain issues and talk about certain things to help, you know, expose and, you know, just speculate about these things. Because, I mean, there are so much more interesting things to talk about, but currently, as the world is heading, I mean, we can't, you know, we got to address these issues, I think.
Yeah, it just sometimes it just seems so trivial when I'm talking about other things. And again, I try to maintain the balance, but there's that part of me that's always looking to educate, and then sometimes I'm told that I'm inappropriate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not only sometimes, it's a lot of times.
A lot of times, yeah.
But maybe, I was on a local talk show one day, and I just ran off at the mouth. I mean, once I started, I couldn't stop, and the host, the friends of mine, they let me go, even though most of the listeners are people, I'd say they're more, a lot of their listeners are older people.
Mm.
They're very attached to their beliefs. They're very horrified by what I say, but the hosts aren't.
Mm. Okay.
And I know that afterwards, a man called in. He said, I don't believe that woman was born Jewish, you know. And one of the hosts said, well, I happen to know her, and she was. And then he said, well, she's an anti-Semite.
Oh.
And, but one of the other hosts, who I'm friendly with, is 20. She's 27, and she's very aware of what's going on. She said, you know, there was a lot of... I didn't really stick around for his phone call. By then, I was just, you know, heading on in my car.
Mm.
And she said that there was a lot of pain in his voice.
Mm.
Because a lot of the stuff that I was saying, it's just so, as we were saying before, it's just so horrific. It just would blow these people's minds. It's like your child telling you you've been a lousy parent when you put your heart and soul into it,
yeah,
in life, you know?
Yeah.
It destroys, but unless you're ready to be able to say, bring it on, I want to hear all about it, and then I'll pick up the pieces, I'll deal with things as they are, not as I wish they are, or yeah. as they were, or as I thought they were.
Yeah.
Deal with them as they are, and where do we go from here?
Mm.
There's so many of us. I mean, David Icke always used to draw the pyramid, and the base of the pyramid is so wide. If we just had all the people at the base of the pyramid knowing what was going on, there would be no, they couldn't win anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, they would run scared.
Mm.
But,
so, I mean, the solution then, I guess, is lies in that, you know, more people just become aware of the issues here that we're talking about. Is that what you're saying, basically?
Basically, yes. I think that education, to keep talking, maybe not to, as Jesus would say, cast pearls before swine, but maybe to see if you're getting any kind of a response, see the readiness of your audience, and then to keep talking. Now, this can be a double-edged sword, because as more people start waking up to the truth of 9/11 and the statistics go up, and there was the C-SPAN presentation where Alex Jones had his scholars for 9/11 truth on, then what happens? Then the other side, or whatever, you know, the controlling elite, maybe at that point decides, well, uh-oh, I think we're slipping here.
Yeah.
Time to pull another one
to
get everybody back on board. So it can backfire very easily.
Mm, yeah.
But I don't know what choice there is.
No, I don't either. I mean, because at the same time, I mean, this information, as you say there, might not be for everyone to I mean, even have to, what should I say, experience. I mean, take maybe the older generations. I mean, maybe it's not, you know, maybe it's not worth the time to, I mean, spend so much energy on trying to convince them on things that maybe they never will accept. I mean, what should we do? Should we, I mean, focus just on the people that are willing to listen and open their eyes to this?
Well, that's a good point, because also when you were saying that, I was thinking of my youngest son, who lately doesn't seem to want to hear this, but sort of knows it.
Mm.
And his friends seem to know it too, and I used to give them videos, and they were all watching them.
Yeah.
And he even told me that it has played conscious rap for me, where the rappers aren't rapping about, you know, the usual stuff, but they're rapping about the Bush flying the planes into the Twin Towers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So there are a lot, maybe it's the younger generation that's going to be left with this mess.
Yeah.
When I don't know your age, but when
I'm 28.
Only after I'm gone,
yeah.
It's going to be my children and grandchildren and great grandchildren whom I've never met. You know, but I mean, will there be a world? Will they be born? I mean, what are we leaving? And that's, I guess, what I'm fighting for. You were talking before about education, and there was something that you said that reminded me of an essay that I had just written recently called The Holy Babel, which was basically, it wasn't something about the Bible, really. It was about the pastor who was talking. But, and it was just this really upsetting experience that I had in a fundamentalist church that I just, out of the curiosity of I just was curious to go back there. Usually, they had a great rock praise band and all that, and I thought, well, let me see what's doing there lately, and it just became a whole put down of the 9/11 symposium that had been on, and with a lot of distortion, and I had walked out, and I got a lot of letters saying that I should have spoken out.
Yeah.
And again, that was kind of a judgment call. I thought if I spoke out and got on a rant or a roll, there'd be no shutting me up, and I would have been escorted out. But also, I didn't know whether anybody sitting there would have been of my mindset. But, never know, because even on the radio, local radio show, there's always a couple of people that come forth and agree with me.
Yeah.
So this, you never know who's lurking within the listenership.
Yeah.
But somebody wrote me a letter and asked me to please reveal the pastor's name because he said that he thought it would be very effective if the pastor got letters from hundreds of Christians disputing what he was saying. And I agreed, and I did. And I just hope that people are polite and not, because sometimes email can be extremely rude and nasty.
Yeah, yeah.
Which accomplishes nothing.
Exactly.
So, I hope that I sent him a nice letter, and I also sent him a booklet on 9/11. And, I don't know.
I mean, that's great. I mean, you've obviously, done what you could for him, I guess. I mean,
all I could do.
Yeah.
And the rest is sitting with him.
Yeah, exactly.
We all have choice. We all, we all have, I guess, free will, although sometimes I wonder because we're being programmed so
much. Yeah.
But we're supposed to have free will, and we can at any minute choose to change our minds.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it feels like that is the case in so many times that, that there are these, the preachers standing up there at the pulpit and they are putting their worldview in other people's lives. And maybe many of the people who were there never even have heard of, alternative theories to 9/11. And here this guy is and basically gives the people out there the views, what they should think about it before they even themselves have had a chance to look at it. So,
that's it. And then that goes back to people putting so much of their belief and faith in the man on the stage or at the pulpit that they feel, well, he knows the truth.
Yeah.
And they, why even question? It's like, when people feel that the Bible is the word of God and there's no reason to even question anything, and then there are other people that say, well, the Bible is basically an allegorical book and it can be read on many, many levels, or there's hundreds of Bibles and there's hundreds of translations, and but people, I mean, that already clouds the issue. It's so much easier to say, here I am on planet Earth. I don't know how I got here, but this book is telling me how I got here, and now this book is telling me what I'm supposed to do if I want to have a good eternity when I leave this place. So it becomes a manual for people, and then they're all happy, as opposed to, well, maybe things aren't what they appear to be, and maybe you're just whirring around in outer space, and maybe... there's more, back to that word responsibility, that more responsibility is going to fall upon you.
Yeah. And when the opportunity arrives, that responsibility ends up in your hands, that's when you gotta, that's when I think when these kinds of issues start popping up to the surface, because we might have spent the previous, I don't know what here, but, 1,000 years, 500 years in some sense, comfortable with the ideas that are maybe presented in the Bible, but as soon as people have the opportunity to research more and read more and get involved in bigger issues that involves even the universe and the study of the stars or whatever, that then automatically new ideas begins to enter the mind, and then you will be able to question the most previous basic stuff, like for instance the Bible, I think.
Tough. I mean, I speak to so many different types of people. I mentioned my excursions into different religions. It's like instead of reading about things, I like to kind of experience them firsthand.
Yeah.
And I've been out west. I've spoken to white nationalists. I've spoken to all different types of people. I've certainly, hung out with black people. I've hung out with fundamentalist Christians, and I've spoken to Orthodox Jews.
Yeah.
And when people have, they're really so armored and so entrenched in their belief systems, and then the communication just dies. I remember speaking to a pastor once long ago, and I was just posing some questions, and he said, "You question too much."
Okay. What are you going to do?
I don't know, because I wrote an essay called Question Everything.
Yeah.
Now people get they get thrown in prison for questioning.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What's going to change this then? Because, I mean, we could basically spin out here on the on the arm of the Milky Way forever and get more and more deeply rooted in our own worldview, and eventually we might end up in a situation where we have different species on the earth almost. I mean, something's gotta give here. Something's gotta happen to shatter.
That's what a lot of people seem to be moving towards, in this kind of almost like a tribalism where they want to hang out with people who are the same as they are I think that that's also an illusion. I think that once you're hanging out in a room full of people that you think are the same as you, you're going to find that there's always differences. And that you can't, because we all have our own points of view, and we're all unique expressions. And there's nothing, to me, even more interesting than sharing your unique expression with somebody else's.
Yeah.
And doesn't mean that you all become one. All just become Hare Krishnas, or fade into this gray mass, but that that we are interconnected, that on certain levels there is a very, very slight difference. And when they've, looked at the genes, the genome, there's a very slight difference among different types of people, and that, it sounds so trite about learning to live with people. Maybe that's why I really try not to get into fights with people, if they're cruel and angry and hateful, or even my friend today, just being so close-minded. And there was a part of me that just said, "Oh, well, chuck off another one." that just really wanted to do that. And yet I said, I love this woman. She's been a dear friend of mine. We've helped each other out in the past. I don't want to do that. I don't want to just storm off into my little armored camp with like-minded people necessarily. That's my comfort zone, but I just want to stay around in the world for a while and see what will happen, see what will change.
Yeah.
Now, there are a lot of people that believe that the whole thing will change if there's a change in consciousness. And once there's a certain, what they call a critical mass, then things are going to start changing.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the hope. Maybe that's my hope, that this may not happen in my lifetime, but that this could possibly happen. And even though there are very few signs pointing to it, who knows? I don't know. at the end of the day, this whole journey called life may be a school. I mean, we may be just having a physical experience. We just may be spiritual beings having a physical experience and learning from it. And maybe it's not meant to be a heaven on earth or, kind of a utopia.
Who knows? I mean...
It's all speculation.
Yeah. And I mean, could there be people then who have took it upon themselves to be the administrators of the experience, and now are people like Pike that we mentioned earlier that basically have theorized that we need three world wars, for instance, to go through, because I know that the conclusion that he mentions in the letter to Mazzini was that it was through that principle that people would know how it was to live life, without knowing God. I mean, and then his interpretation of what God is and all that. I mean, it's nothing that I agree on. But I know there he is, and he works now, as an administrator of the experience, so to speak. What's your take on that? I mean,
yeah, you don't know. You don't know if people are playing roles. You don't know if Judas played a role with Jesus. You don't know.
Yeah.
You don't. There's so little that we know, and well, maybe we will know more. Maybe how they say we only use 5% of our brain or whatever, and that we have these strands of DNA that aren't activated.
Yeah.
And maybe at a point they will become activated, and maybe we will start to understand, and we will start to realize that it's not a competitive world; it's a cooperative world.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And there will be, who was it that said that, what was it, that man is the missing link between the ape and the human being?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, maybe we just haven't become human yet.
No, I mean it is an evolving process, and maybe... maybe there are different, stages that human evolution, goes through, and now maybe we are at a point where we are evolving our consciousness and our awareness on a expanding it to a new level, and this is what causing this dichotomy in our kind of collective unconscious mind here, because it seems like there is panic in some sense, but I am at the same time encouraged to think that it's going to work out in the end.
Well, that's good, and if you can hold on to that, if you can hold on to that optimism,
yeah,
that we're just going right now through the trial of fire,
yeah,
and or the dark night of the soul, whatever,
yeah,
but we're going to come out better for having had this experience.
Yeah.
That's a great way to think.
Yeah, I think we have.
I have to hang on to some of the darker moments.
Exactly.
I try not to listen to too much news, but every now and then when I'm listening to the internet, the news slips in.
Yeah, exactly.
and it's tough, I think sometimes we really have to be we have to be careful about what we put in our bodies, but we have to be really careful of what we put in our minds, too.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And, Judy, we have about, 30 seconds or so left here of the show, but, is there anything that you'd like to leave us with? This has been a great conversation, by the way, so thank you very much for being here.
I really enjoyed talking to you. Should I leave you with my website?
yeah, sure. Why not? Sure.
Shameless plug. www.judyandreas, that's ANDREAS.com. And I invite everybody to come and, see what I'm doing, who I am. And I really enjoyed this with you.
Absolutely. Keep up the good work, and we will talk further down the road, okay?
I hope so.
I hope so, too. Thank you very much, Judy.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. You have been listening to Red Ice Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. And next week we will continue with program 5 in the series with Michael Tsarion. So tune in next Sunday at 2 p.m. Pacific or 10 p.m. Greenwich time. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.